There's a snake in my boot.
Ooh, there's a thorn in my Tallahassee.
Oh, there's a rose bush in my derriere.
Come over here, Buzz, and take this garter belt down off my undergarments.
This garter belt?
Well. Yes, I've got something stuck in my garter belt, Buzz.
There's a critter.
Buzz, there's a critter in my knickers.
Goodness me. There's a critter in your garter belt.
So how's it going, me old buccarino?
Oh, yeah, man. Pretty good. I spent a lot of money on a lamp, you know? It's gargantuan, I would say. How big do you think a big lamp is? Not a standing lamp. You know, a lamp that sits on something. And obviously no one understands measurements, so put it in, like, compare it to things.
You've said gargantuan, so a gargantuan lamp, that's a standing lamp, and it'll be as tall as you.
No, this is not standing. It's not a standing lamp.
It's not a standing lamp.
No, it's not a standing lamp. It's a lamp that sits on something, and its body is gargantuan.
Its body or its head?
Well, its body and its head.
The lamp, the shade.
The shade and the body.
Big.
I would describe them both as gargantuan. I'm not sure I've ever seen a bigger lamp.
But do you fear it? Do you fear it topples? Is there a fear of toppling? Okay, so it's not that.
No, it's like a tree trunk. You know, it's the least likely to topple of any lamp I own.
Right.
It's as wide as it is thick.
Right.
As tall, I mean.
As wide as it is thick. It's an elephant cock of a lamp. So
it's a standing lamp.
You know, we had that ages ago, years ago. We had a long discussion where you revealed to me how you buy towels. And it was a big revelation to me.
What was the revelation?
Well, all the time I'd been buying big towels, and I'd always be thinking this towel is tiny.
You mean bath sheets?
Right.
Let's let new listeners in on the secret.
This is big.
But what you're looking for is a bath sheet. You're not looking for a bath towel. You're looking for a bath sheet. That's right. I remember that conversation now.
So, in that, you opened my eyes, and I thought, "Oh my! This is why I've always been getting tiny towels."
Yeah.
Because you knew what the bath sheet was. I think what you've done here is the reverse of that, and you've accidentally bought a standing lamp, and you thought it's a table lamp, because you're the BFG, right? And you thought, no. Oh, that's a tiny lamp. This is supposed to be for my little finger.
Right.
And then you put it next to your wife, and you've gone, oh my God, this...
It's gargantuan.
This is gargantuan.
Right.
You want me to answer your question?
No, it's not that. It's not that. I've got two ways of describing the lamp, okay?
Gargantuan.
The first way... Well, no, the three ways. Yeah, the first one is gargantuan.
Yeah.
The second one is if you went out on Halloween and you went out trick-or-treating with your child and you saw a pumpkin this size, you would scarcely believe it, okay? That's the first thing. You think, where on earth have they got a pumpkin that big?
A real pumpkin. Okay?
A real pumpkin.
Not a plastic pumpkin. Right.
Where on earth have they got a real pumpkin that big?
Right.
But that's the second way. The third way is if you somehow went to a major metropolitan city, a major world city, and you stayed in a 5-star hotel in the presidential suite, you know, in the kind of world leader suite, those sorts of hotel rooms where they have all the different little off vestibules and the big rooms, and they've just got all bits and bobs standing around because they've got to fill all this space, you know?
Yeah.
And you saw a lamp in there. It's this kind of lamp. It's like a lamp that would make sense in the presidential suite of a major hotel.
Because I've got like a fourth way to describe it, and I've not even seen the lamp. The fourth way. This is the fourth way that I would describe it. I would say, do you want to know how big this? Do you want to know how big this lamp is?
I would say, yeah, I want to know how big the lamp is.
And then I'd say, well, take a look down my trousers.
Right. Yeah.
You'd
get someone to look down your trousers.
I wouldn't. I'd say I would be a suggestion. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't I wouldn't pull my pants down. I wouldn't.
Well, no, that would be hideous. It'd be crazy.
And that would be an assault. I would say there's a point of comparison. Because this is
there's one.
This is just as big, I'd say. This is this is just
I'm going to send you a picture of the lamp, okay? Let me just find it.
All right. Are you looking down your trousers? Sending. Oh, here we go. Okay. Right.
Do you see how big that is?
I mean, this it's after all that, I'll say.
No, the picture makes it look small. It's actually really big.
Yeah. No, but then after all that, though.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmondo, aka Adam Richmond. This is the show where we talk about the movies or films we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And I'm joined as ever by my cohort, my co-host, my buyer of large lamps, Mr. Joe Devine.
Up on 110th Street.
That's right. On today's episode, we are doing the 1997 Quentin Tarantino written and directed picture, Jackie Brown, based on the book of the same name by Elmore Leonard. It's not called Elmore Leonard. It's called Jackie Brown.
Right.
The
I don't think the book's called that.
It's called Rum Punch. Oh, no, yes, right. I fucked it up. Based on the book of the same name.
I mean, no, you didn't fuck it up. It's just that your joke doesn't apply here.
Right, yeah.
I said that because actually I learned that the character wasn't called Jackie Brown either until cast Pam Grier.
What's she called in Rum Punch?
She's called Jackie B, some other B name. But Quentin Tarantino, because he cast Pam Grier, who was very famous in the 70s for playing Foxy Brown,
yes,
he wanted people to make the connection. So he changed the character name to Jackie Brown, which is great because it's a great title and it's a much better name than the other one. I can't remember what it was.
Rum Punch. It's not based on the book of the same name. It's the first time we've ever done this and I just was in, I'm in sleep mode. It's based on the book of a different name, Rum Punch, by Elmore Leonard, of which we'll speak later. I'm not going to read the letterbox. I've got the Blu-ray. I bought it specially because I wanted to own the physical media.
Did you really? How much did you spend on it?
I got it on World of Books for about, I think, a fiver. And it's got, I tell you what, well, I mean, I'll get to what the specials are, what the special extras are when I read the blurb.
Go on then.
4 stars, Empire. Tarantino's finest, most mature movie to date. Time out. Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, scores with an explosive mix of intense action and edgy humour in his twisty crime yarn, which is Too Cool for School, total film. What do sexy stewardess Pam Grier, a street-tough gun-runner Samuel L. Jackson, a lonely bail bondsman Robert Forster, a shifty ex-con Robert De Niro, an earnest federal agent Michael Keaton, and a stoned-out beach bunny Bridget Fonda have in common? That's a long sentence.
A long sentence.
By the end of it, I'm like, what? I don't even care what they've got in common.
Mm.
They're 6 players on the trail of $500,000 in cash. The only questions are, who's getting played and who's gonna make the big score? Who's gonna?
Yeah, I like that.
Academy Award nominee for Best Supporting Actor, Forster, Jackie Brown is now presented for the first time in eye-popping high-definition Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that you do this on a DVD.
With a stunning new transfer. With a stunning new transfer overseen by Tarantino and new lossless 5J DTS HD Master Audio with over 3 hours of bonus features.
Oh, my God.
Breaking down Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown, how it went down. retrospective featuring interviews with Quentin Tarantino, Pam Grier, Robert mm-hmm. Forster, Samuel L. Jackson, Robert De Niro,
oh,
Bridget
wait.
Fonda.
Oh, wait. I'm editing this episode.
A look back at Jackie Brown interview.
No, I've edited this out. It was Jackie Burke, by the way.
There we go.
That's the name of the character. Jackie Burke is the name of the character in the book.
Do you know anything, before we even get on to Tarantino, do you know anything about Elmore Leonard? Because you've mentioned Jackie Burke.
No, I don't know anything about Elmore Leonard.
You've never read any Elmore Leonard?
Not that I'm aware of. Have you?
I have. And also...
Do you own some in your house?
I do. I've got Cat Chaser on my bookshelf.
Cat Chaser. Okay, wait. Let's play a quick game, okay? You name for me... three Elmore Leonard books, one of which is not, which is made up.
Right.
Okay. Don't include Cat Chaser because I now know that. And you've got to think of the made up one off the top of your head, but I will allow you to look up two other real Elmore Leonard books if you so choose. Okay. Because Cat Chaser does sound quite made up already.
Okay. Well, I'll play it. It's just a nice straight bat. Get Shorty.
Mm hmm.
Ombre.
Ombre?
Yeah.
Yeah? And what?
Oh, let me give you four.
No. Three. The game's three.
Tishomingo Tune. So we've got what have I said? I've said...
We've got Get Shorty. Tishomingo Tune. And ombre. Yeah. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? This is very interesting because you've played the game well. Let me first compliment you, okay? What listeners won't know is that I watched you read those names off your phone. So at one point you were acting, and I'm driven in a couple of different directions here. You're a smart guy. I think there's a world where you've tried to throw... Get Shorty under the train and just get it in there quick and assume that because I know that there's a film called Get Shorty, which I haven't seen, by the way, with Danny DeVito, that I will assume Elmore Leonard did write Get Shorty and I won't ever think. And then you'll throw in a couple of ones that sound really made up, like Tishomingo Tune and Ombre. So that's one thought.
It's a good thought.
That's if you're clever.
Right, that's if I'm clever.
Yeah, that's if you're clever. If you're not clever, you've tried to sneak ombre in between two different books. Although I do believe that you read that aloud, because I think a man that was making up a title, ombre, would just say hombre, and you didn't. You like... Spanishized ombre. So I think you read that from somewhere. And then Tishomingo, I just don't think you could make up Tishomingo Tune. I mean, that doesn't sound like something that could be made up by you. On the basis of all of that, I'm going to have to say that you're a clever man and that Get Shorty is the fake book.
I love it that you think I'm a clever man. Get Shorty is a movie, and it's also based on the book of the same name by Elmore Leonard.
Oh,
I maybe slightly cheated in that he wrote a book called Tishomingo Blues.
Oh, that's so cheating.
Oh, okay.
Come on, man. That's cheating. You know that's cheating. All the work I just put into that game.
I saw you staring at me. You were staring at me, looking at me acting.
You should have said, don't look at me. My God, I can't.
That's why I said, can I say four? And you went, no,
yeah,
you can't.
Tishomingo was the thing that completely sold that one. That was completely sold. You don't even know what that word means. You've got no idea what Tishomingo is.
Tishomingo is a place.
Oh, yeah. Where is it?
It's in the bayou, you know.
I'm going to tell you the names of three John Grisham books. One of them's going to be fake. You have to identify which one it is, okay?
Yeah.
Rogue Lawyer.
Okay.
Dark River.
Ooh.
Calcio Joe.
It's Calcio Joe.
No, that's a real one. That's a real one. Calcio Joe. The number one New York Times bestseller. A surprising and moving novel of fathers and sons, forgiveness and redemption, set in the world of Major League Baseball. Grisham knocks it out of the park, says the Washington Post.
And like Calcio Joe has like a kind of a bone deficiency whereby if he gets hit by the baseball, his bones snap and...
It might be calcio if it's Italian. If it's Italian, calcio is football. So your options then, what did I say? I said Dark River and I said Rogue Lawyer.
Dark River's the name of a movie you've seen, so Dark River.
Well, I mean, it's not. I just made it up. I've never seen a film called Dark River.
You have?
There's dark metals, or whatever it's called, with...
But Dark River's got the brother and sister. You have seen it. You told me about it. You've just forgotten it.
Oh my god, that was rubbish. It's the one with Sean Bean as the dad.
Yeah,
I've spoiled that film for anyone there. I'll bleep that bit out.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. Back to Elmore Leonard.
Who's that?
Quentin Tarantino is a huge Elmore Leonard fan. He was a big old book fan, was old Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And so making Jackie Brown was, you know, right up his alley. Now I've got a book of Martin Amis essays.
Of course.
In my house.
That's just who you are.
It's called The War Against Cliché. Because that's all what I'm about. I'm about the war against cliché too. Essays and reviews.
Wait, you're about the sequel to The War Against Cliché. Well. By the way, I've got an incredible quote here that I really want to read to you. I wrote this down the other day, this quote from... It's from a book of short stories that I'm reading by E.M. Forster. Mm. You know E.M. Forster? You probably haven't heard of him. Anyway, here's the quote. It's a really good quote. That's why I wrote it down. It says, to educated people, silence matters. It's a token of stupidity and lack of invention. I racked my brains for some remark that would serve to keep my self-respect, but could find none. There you go. It's good, wasn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
It's a good little quote there.
Yeah.
I just want you to know I'm the kind of person that brings quotes from short stories, short essays to... I bring them here.
You bring them here. I mean, this is about... Elmore Leonard, on which the text that this film Jackie Brown is based on. I just thought you'd be interested, and you look like you don't want.
Interested. I just want you to know my quote was also, it wasn't directly about what we're talking about, but it was indirectly thematically about what we're talking about. But anyway, go on. What's your quote?
So what's so interesting about this and Amis's essay on Elmore Leonard? Like Martin Amis is a He's dead now, but he's very kind of highfalutin, wordy, famed English novelist. And so for him to be unleashing praise on like Elmore Leonard is a kind of a genre, considered a crime genre pulp writer. And so there's a clash there. If you know about the two writers, that is, you get that there's a clash there.
The Tishomingo Two.
Tishomingo Two. But so I read this essay in preparation for this, and I want you to tell me who you think this reminds you of.
Okay.
This is Martin Amis writing about Elmore Leonard. Nevertheless, X possesses gifts of ear and eye and of timing and phrasing that even the most snobbish masters of the mainstream must vigorously covet. And the question is, how does he allow these gifts play in his efficient, unpretentious, and delightfully similar yarns about semi-literate hustlers, mobsters, go-go dancers, cocktail waitresses, loan sharks, bounty hunters, blackmailers, and syndicate executioners? My answer may sound reductive, but here goes. The essence of X is to be found in his use of the... No, we'll forget that. Right. And then that's one bit. Who could he be... Who is he writing about? Is he writing about who I think, or is he writing about Elmore Leonard?
Yeah. Just to check, when you're saying X, there is a name in there, right? Yeah, and I'm going to tell you afterwards who it is. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Right, yeah. That's the game.
Yeah.
X is as American as jazz, and jazz is in origin a naive form. Yet he is no Louis Armstrong. He can do melody, but he also... But he is also as harshly sophisticated as late period Coleman Hawkins. He understands the postmodern world, the world of wised up rabble and zero authenticity. His characters are equipped not with obliging suggestive childhoods or case histories, but with cranial jukebox of situation comedies and talk shows and advertising jingles, their dreams and dreads all mediated and second hand. They are not lost souls or dead souls, terrible and pitiable, and often downright endearing. They are simply junk souls, quarter pounders with cheese.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, that went the long way around the houses for that.
No, sometimes you've got to go a long way around the houses. Beverly Hills is a busy place.
So that's Amos on we don't need to get rid of who's Martin Amos writing about?
Quentin Tarantino.
He could be writing about Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
Right? Am I right?
Sure. No, right? Absolutely. I think he's writing about Quentin Tarantino.
But he's writing about Elmore Leonard, and Elmore Leonard was Tarantino's...
When did he write this?
This is in the past. Martin Amis is dead. I've got to find the page again.
Is it possible that Quentin Tarantino read that, and while he's modelling himself on the life of Elmore Leonard, he's picked up quite a pound of cheat? You know, he's picked up some of the old... he's living the life that Martin Amis saw...
My name is
Leonard Elmore.
Say so my name is.
To play. I don't know what his name is. I don't know what these people are.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't want to say that Tarantino is a thief. He's a magpie. But yeah, he might. You know, he might well have read My Name Is his reviews of the. I doubt it. But that's what's so good about Tarantino. He steeped himself in someone else's language and lore.
He dipped himself in someone else's chili. Dip.
Yeah, and infused his taste. And
right,
what lovely taste it was. Wasn't it great watching Jackie Brown? Did you enjoy rewatching Jackie Brown? You hadn't watched it in ages.
Yeah, I did enjoy watching it. I did. Do you know what? I watched it a lovely Monday afternoon.
Tell me.
Enjoyed myself. Is there a better time to watch Jackie Brown? I'm not sure that there is. I also thought it was nice to go back in time and watch a Tarantino film that wasn't Pulp Fiction. That feels quite different from his more modern films. I liked it for that reason. It was a bit more, dare I say, a little bit more mature, maybe? A bit more nuanced. I really like the ideas here, the whole conceit. I like the idea that there's these characters who are slightly older, who've already... somewhat lived their lives. You know, when we meet Jackie Brown and she gets stopped by the cops at the beginning of the film, or well, you know, Michael Keaton also from Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms Agency, they sort of reading her through her priors, and they mention that she's divorced and that her previous husband, I think, is in jail. She's been caught for bringing things into the country illegally before in her job as an air hostess. And so I really like the idea that there's a sort of whole story that's already happened. That's also true in the case of Max Cherry, who is the bail bondsman, who's in his late 50s and lives a sort of quiet, I don't know, maybe quite small life. And also it's clearly the case with Robert De Niro playing Lewis and Samuel L. Jackson playing Ordell.
Ordell Roby. Robbie.
These guys are old, and they've shared jail time before. I mean, and in fact, the sort of crux of the Ordell and Lewis relationship is one of lamenting for the past, right? So I quite like that there's a film that exists that has these older characters in it. And one of my favourite things about it, although I do think there are some weak elements... related as well, is the relationship between Max Cherry and Jackie Brown, because it feels like a relationship between two people who are old enough to enjoy romance but not believe in it. And so there's something really nice about it. It just doesn't feel like it feels like a film that has a lot of Tarantino elements to it, but it doesn't really feel like a Tarantino film. It feels like Tarantino doing something slightly different. And if you look at his career, in a linear fashion, and you watch all of his, you know, his last three films, for example, I think you see him kind of shaving off the edges until he finds his perfect formula, well, for him, and then he make, you know, his last three films are all essentially the same, just versions of each other. Jackie Brown feels as though it has more, much more scope to it, you know?
Which three of those? Once Upon a Time?
Inglourious Basterds, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and...
Django.
And Django Unchained. I feel like they are, they're films from the same playbook. They're very identifiably the same director who made all of them. It's not to say that they're not good films. I really like them. But I think Jackie Brown feels to me as though it has more scope, because it's clear to me watching it that Quentin Tarantino hasn't, he's not yet fully locked into what his thing is. And so Jackie Brown feels like it could have been made by a handful of different directors. And there's a lot of Quentin Tarantino in there, but it's a bit softer. It's a bit more gentle. It's a bit more mature, I think, with some, you know, very immature elements. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I think there are, it's not a perfect film, but I really enjoyed watching it. I think it's great. What about you?
Yeah, it's definitely as mature as he gets. I think it's his masterpiece, and everything since has been a regression of sorts. Like, what I love about this film, the screenplay I think is phenomenal. The dialogue is amazing. And there's what he does with showing character through action. It's never been better. I'm sure he's equaled it, but there's just some lovely stuff, lovely subtle stuff that he reveals with character through, because everyone talks about his dialogue, but he is also great at revealing character through action, which is what great screenwriting really is.
What's a good example of that from this film?
Just little, there's lovely little touches, like with Max Cherry, played by Robert Forster. He takes a book along. He's got to go and pick up Jackie Brown. He hasn't met Jackie Brown yet. He's going to pick her up. He takes a book along with him, and he's waiting out in the car. He's dropping someone else off. And then there's the buzzer or whatever, and he gets up, and the way he just folds over the corner of his book, of the page of the book, it seems like a nothing little detail, but it tells me a lot about Max Cherry.
Right. He doesn't have a bookmark. But he doesn't want to lose his place in the book. Who is a man that without a bookmark? Because I actually, I was being slightly facetious, but I do think that there are two types of people. There are people who have bookmarks, and there are people who fold over the corner of pages. And sometimes the twain meet, but never shall the twain meet. Do you know what I mean? What are you? Are you a bookmark guy? Are you a page folder guy?
I think you know the answer to that.
You're a bookmark guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think?
So are you. You're a bookmark guy.
No.
Well, you present as one. I'm a page folder guy.
I don't know. Sometimes I have a receipt. One year, friend of ours, Craig, English Craig, he bought me this this old card game. It's a Top Trumps game, but it was called Tory Scum. And it had all different Tory politicians from over the years and their top Trump's ratings, a little biography of them. It was quite funny. And for about 3 years, I used those cards as bookmarks, to the extent where sometimes when I go back through old books, I leaf through and I find, oh, there's Theresa May. But no, I don't have any bookmarks. And occasionally I'll use a receipt. Mostly I'm a page folder, you know. Sometimes I'm a leave a book upside down on its face open guy, so that I just know where to pick up. Don't even need the hassle of having to open. But why do you use one bookmark? What's your situation?
No, I've just
do you
got,
own
got,
a bookmark?
No. A receipt is a bookmark.
A train ticket, right? That's the classic bookmark.
A train ticket is a bookmark. So if you've used that, you've used a bookmark. Another great moment, I think, later on in the movie. You've got Ordell Roby on the phone nattering away, and it pans over to Robert De Niro and Bridget Fonda, and the big switcheroo set piece of the movie is going to happen, and Bridget Fonda's been needling Robert De Niro's character to maybe like pull a fast one on Samuel L. Jackson, and it's just them on the they're watching telly together, and they've been before that been getting on, and then she's kind of needling him with her feet.
Sure,
there's no dialogue, but you see everything. You see how their relationship has fundamentally curdled.
Yeah,
in seconds. And yeah. The movie is packed with moments like that.
That's really nice. Do you think Lewis would be a bookmark guy or a page folder guy?
He would have a bookmark because he'd know he'd need one. But really? He'd have the book, but he probably... Yeah, because he's quite forgetful. He knows he's losing it. He's quite a... He has a certain self-image of himself, and he'd want the bookmark, and he'd want people to think, I'm an ordered guy and I've got a bookmark.
Or Dell would have... an ostentatious bookmark, I think. Some kind, you know, like a book, like one of those bookmarks that has a little bit of string that hangs off the top of it. Do you know what I mean? To show that there's a bookmark in there.
He'd have a leather fronded bookmark.
Yeah, yeah. What about Jackie Brown?
What about Jackie Brown?
I think she's a page turner.
Yeah, she's a folder.
I think she wants to be a bookmark, but she's working through the film to become a bookmark person, but she's trapped in this world of folding, and that's what she's trying to escape, you know?
Yeah.
Because folders aren't all bad people. It's not like that, you know? It's not just that you're disorganized. It's sometimes it might be that you're a free spirit, a page folder, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's another great moment, for example, with Jackie Brown, where she's in the changing room all by herself. And it's one of the rarest moments in a Quentin Tarantino movie, a moment of quiet and self-reflection. And she's about to do this big thing, and she's staring at herself in the mirror. And you get a lot out of the performance. Pam Grier isn't great in this movie, but she's great in moments. She's great enough, and she's fantastic in that moment, and it feels especially rich in usually what is Tarantino. He's got it's dialogue, or there's a camera move, or there's some kind of needle drop, and it's one of those lovely little quiet moments, and it tells you everything about where she is. You totally buy into what she's doing. She's supposed to be 45. No offense to Pam Grier, she looks a little bit older than 40.
She's 47 in real life.
When the movie's made,
yeah.
She's playing 44. Yeah, I mean...
I think it's fine.
I don't know. She's
Why do you not think she's great? I thought she was great.
No, she's mainly good. Sometimes I don't... She's not performance. I think, she's not got like the nuance or... She hasn't got the nuance of like a great actor.
But the character doesn't call for it. I think one of the nice things about Jackie Brown, the character, is that you never really know who she is or what she's planning or what she's thinking. She's kind of an enigma, you know. The way that Tarantino has her... I mean, there are about three or four fairly lengthy scenes where you just watch her walking with a, you know, straight face and a sense of determination, and as if she's going somewhere. I think one of the things I enjoyed about the film... was there's a scene at the very end where Max Cherry and Jackie Brown, they kiss, and Jackie Brown invites Max Cherry to Spain, to Madrid with her. And he doesn't, and I think he wants to go, but he says he doesn't want to go. And I watched that and I thought, I don't know if there's something I've missed or I'm not getting, or if I'm supposed to, fully embrace the ambiguity of this. Because I never really believe that Jackie Brown actually loves Max Cherry.
Yeah, she doesn't mean it. And that's what's so wonderful about... You mentioned it earlier, but like he knows that she doesn't really mean it.
Sure.
But he's also old enough and wise enough to know...
To appreciate that she asked, right?
Yeah, he's not resentful of it.
But that's my point. Like, therefore it's not required of the... Like, this nuance I don't think is required of the character, because she's fronting the whole way through the film. I don't think the audience are ever really supposed to know what she's thinking or what she's doing. And in that sense, I think she's perfect for it. I'm not saying that Pam Grier, the actress, has the capacity to go deeper than that when it's called for. I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen it in another film, but I think it's not called for here. And actually, in some ways, it sort of works better that the character is a bit stilted, because I feel as though I'm watching someone act. I'm watching a character acting with everyone that she's with, and it sort of works. Maybe it works on a meta level in an unintended way. Maybe it's unintended on her part and it's intended on the part of Quentin Tarantino. Maybe it's intended on everyone's part. But I can't think of that many scenes where I feel like I need more than her. Even that scene that you mentioned where she's looking in the mirror in the changing room and she's psyching herself up for another performance to go outside and to be stressed out and to convince the police officers that something's gone wrong. I can't think of that many scenes where I think, I needed more from her here.
Yeah, no, it's the minor nitpick. Like, Robert Forster is kind of on the sort of same level, but also he's kind of giving the most straightforward performance you could give. But it kind of really, really always works for him, because that's exactly who the character is. But then, like, I think, you know, you see, like, Michael Keaton, De Niro and Samuel L. Jackson, they're all on another level.
Really? Do you think so?
Yeah, Michael Keaton, the stuff he's doing.
I really don't like Michael Keaton in the film.
Really?
He's one of my major downsides. Like, he's, for me, his casting is one of the reasons why this isn't, like, an elite film.
He makes it elite because you do not know if he's... like, got an agenda or not. You don't know. I'm every time I watch that, you sort of think he's shifty. He's playing it really shifty, but also not. Like, he feels like he's playing it in a he's a good guy. I really like the energy he brings to it. He did so well, or they liked him so much, they bring him back for Out of Sight, and he plays the same character.
Yeah, I mean, he plays the same character in many, many films. Like,
you've come here and you've brought good and wealth, but you have also brought your bad habits as a backslider. You've lusted after women and you have abandoned your child. Your child that you raised, you have abandoned all because he was sick and you have sinned. So say it now. I am a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
I've abandoned my child.
I will never backslide.
I will never backslide.
I was lost, but now I am found.
I was lost, but now I'm found.
I have abandoned my child.
I've abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood!
Give me the blood, Lord, and let me get away!
Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior?
Yes, I do.
One of the people in the film gives the best performance. Which one is it? You guess. I'll tell you if you're right.
It's Robert De Niro.
It's Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro's performance in the film is light years ahead of everyone else's performance in the film. Robert De Niro in this film is wonderful. He's got so much presence. He's so undercooked. The character, like, what I really enjoyed about it was it's like watching a guy who's conquered the world, who knows how to do everything on a film set, almost deliberately, like, doing it in a way that's small and that's, you know, that's different. And I guess, like, part of the joy you get from it is the fact that, you know, you're watching Robert De Niro do this thing. If you watched another actor play a character like this, you might not think the same thing of it, because you don't have all these preconceived notions of what to expect. But I watched it and then I thought, oh, Leo in One Battle After Another is doing Robert De Niro in Jackie Brown. I mean, it's like it's yes, almost identical. It's like he's watched the film and gone, and for the first time, I saw how older people see, well, they go, well, Robert De Niro, and then they've got like, oh, Leonardo DiCaprio, who obviously idolizes Robert De Niro. But I saw it. I knew that, but I saw it for the first time. I thought, that's a performance modeled on this time, not specifically this film, but that's a performance in One Battle After Another that's modeled on this sort of performance. And I love it. It's great. You know, I think Leo does it brilliantly. Robert De Niro does it brilliantly. He's just, he's magnificent. I think it's maybe one of the best things I've ever seen him do.
But yeah, I kept wanting to interrupt. I think, yeah, it's probably one of his great performances. I think if it had been any other actor, this would be a performance everyone talks about all the time.
Right.
But because it, like, as you said, because it's Robert De Niro, it's the most slept on acting performance of all time.
Right.
I love the fact that you've nailed it. I
knew you would like it. I knew you'd like it.
I love it because I love Leo, but
it diminishes something that I like and that you don't like as much as me. So I knew you'd love it because it fits with your existing agenda.
Yeah, so it plays into that. So I'm happy. I'm as happy as Larry. But yeah, it really is one of the all-time. Yeah, you can't almost. Yeah, it's hard to wrap your hands around. You just feel it. You feel it, and you see it, and it's and then how it all pays off in the movie as well is phenomenal.
Lewis, your ass used to be beautiful.
You get a performance like that. You know, this is it adds points to the masterpiece.
Yeah.
Side. Although to be fair to Quentin, he did also get, I'd say, a similarly peak performance from Samuel L. Jackson in Django Unchained.
Yeah, that's true. Has Robert De Niro ever been in a Wes Anderson film? Don't think so.
No.
No, that would be horrible.
He's also not been in a Christopher Nolan movie.
I'm glad he hasn't. I don't think he should be in a Christopher Nolan film. I don't think he belongs in either Wes Anderson or Christopher Nolan.
Al Pacino belongs in a Christopher Nolan movie and he fit like a charm.
Yeah, Pacino does. Which one was he in? Oh, Insomnia.
Yeah, the one you haven't seen.
No, I'm saying I can imagine him in a Christopher Nolan film.
Fuck off. What? Like, I love, like, you're sat there, you're so happy. Yeah, I can imagine Al Pacino in a Christopher Nolan movie. Robert De Niro, no.
No, that makes complete sense to me. It makes complete sense to me. They're opposite sides of the same coin, aren't they?
This is the game.
Oh my God.
I'm going to say, actors' names.
Yeah, and I'll tell you whether they should exist in a Christopher Nolan film. Or no. Whether they would be good in a Christopher Nolan film or not.
Yeah, let's say good. Doesn't matter. Good or belong.
Yeah.
We can be. That'll be fun.
Or we can expand the game. You can say an actor's name and I can tell you a director that they belong with.
Let's do five of the Nolan game.
Yeah, okay.
And then
okay.
And then we'll do the other game. Yeah, we'll okay. See which.
Come on, here we go. Hit me.
Chris Evans.
The question here is, could Chris Evans be in a Nolan film?
Does he belong in one?
No.
Great, okay. Just
I'm surprised yes you even no. asked that one.
I'm not trying to catch you out. George Clooney.
No. I'd love to see it, but no.
Brad Pitt.
It's closer, but no still.
I'm like that, like, what? Why don't either of those belong in a Nolan movie?
It's just how I see art, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, Samuel L. Jackson.
Not in a Nolan film, no.
I think the problem with Nolan is he's hoovered up so many actresses recently.
That's true, yeah. He's trying to...
Emma Stone?
No. No. God, now the game is, can you name an actor that should be in Nolan films?
James McAvoy.
Ooh, now, that's interesting because I think the answer's probably no, but I think he could. I think it's possible that in a kind of like about face sort of, you know, like real mainstream revival, James McAvoy could do a Nolan, but I think on the whole it's a no.
Meryl Streep.
Now, the thing is, it would be folly to say that Meryl Streep couldn't do anything, right? Because I can't imagine her in a Nolan film. That does not mean that she couldn't be in a Nolan film. I think she probably could. but not in the traditional sense.
I love that. Not in the. What do you mean? Like, what are you looking for?
Well, like Chris Nolan films are all just tone poems, right? That's all they are. They're just tone poems with some plot and like really clever writing. But mainly, when people watch them, it's just like a tone poem where you're listening to Max Richter or some other, you know, sweeping score, and you're watching like something a bit melancholic or a little bit, you know, furtive or in some cases sweeping. But a lot of the people that you've mentioned, they would be against the grain of the tone.
But they're so good at acting. Like, he got Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, but Robert Downey Jr. shouldn't have been in Oppenheimer. That was a miscast. He shouldn't be in the film. There are a few people in Oppenheimer that shouldn't be in the film. That was reaching like embarrassing Wes Anderson level ensemble bullshit. You know,
okay.
I didn't like that. I didn't like that. I'd much prefer Oppenheimer if I didn't know any of the people other than the core cast.
Okay, great. Okay, no, right. Job done.
Now I'm going to play a game with you, okay, where I say an actor's names and you tell me, do they belong in either, they can only live in one, Chris Nolan, PTA, Coens, Spielberg, Sofia Coppola, or Catherine Bigelow, okay?
Okay.
Do you remember those names?
Hang on, so we've got Spielberg, hang on, Spills.
You got Spielberg.
Yeah.
You got PTA.
Yeah.
You got Nolan. You got Catherine Bigelow, you got Sofia Coppola.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
Marlon Brando.
That's a great one. Paul Thomas Anderson.
That's interesting. I would be tempted to say Sofia Coppola, but I think that would be wrong.
And also that's because she's the daughter of the guy who had him in The Godfather.
I didn't think about that connection. I didn't think about that.
Nepo, baby. Sofia Coppola. Casts.
Andrew Lincoln.
Bigelow. As a bit part guy you don't even recognise.
Right. Like a guy that shows up in the Hurt Locker, but he's in it for like 2 minutes. And he's like, you got to get out of here, guys. That sort of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds. It's got to be Spielberg, right?
Yeah, Spielberg. There's no one but Spielberg.
No, it's interesting. What does that mean to you? Why is it Spielberg?
Just because Spielberg would make that kind of movie that's kind of big and glossy and glitzy, and he'd take the hit, and maybe he could wrangle some sort of fun out of Ryan Reynolds.
Got it. Okay,
but
that makes
none
sense.
Of the other four are touching him.
No, fair. Jake Gyllenhaal.
He's... I'd love to say Nolan, but he's not really. Nolan's never going to touch him.
No, I don't think Nolan... Well, do you know...
Coppola.
He could do it. He could have been in The Prestige.
No, he couldn't.
Yeah, he could.
Coppola, because he could have been in The Beguiled.
Yeah, okay.
Colin Farrell played that part. So, yeah. Coppola, plop him in a Coppola.
Angelina Jolie.
Bigelow? Yeah, she plays the steely... Like leader on a bomb squad.
No, you can't just say she's in Hurt Locker. Every Catherine Bigelow film is Hurt Locker. Come on,
she's not in a Nolan movie. She doesn't belong in a Nolan movie.
Couldn't you put her in a Sofia Coppola movie?
She's not really good enough an actress to be in a Coppola movie.
Natalie Portman.
Nolan.
Really?
Yeah.
No, come on, that's a stretch, man. You've leaned there, you've leaned, I would say.
I think I'm happy with the lean.
Have you had any PTAs yet? I don't think you have.
Yeah, Marlon Brando.
That was the only one. The only one worthy.
Portman does not belong... Portman can't swing PTA.
Cate Blanchett.
Spielberg. She was already in... She was in one of the indie movies.
Yeah. All right.
That's where she belongs. She thinks she's better than everyone else. She can stay in a Spielberg film.
Kate Winslet. She could do anything.
Yeah, all five.
No, pick one. You've got to pick one, but I think she could do anything.
Is that who I want her to be? Well, she's not being in a... She wouldn't be in a PTA. Nolan. She'd love to be in a Nolan movie.
Yeah, she'd be good in a Nolan movie.
Oppenheimer's mummy.
Whoa.
One.
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 One. with a W.
He says, do you know what they call the cheeseburger in Mordor? They call it a human meat. Meat's back on the menu, boys.
Should we play the box office game?
Oh, it's hot in this room. Tell you what, it's hot.
It's hot.
We're going to have to skate through this so that I can return to a room that isn't about 50 degrees, okay? One of the sacrifices that our listeners don't understand that we make for them during heat waves is we record podcasts in small rooms with no fan, you know, and windows closed for the sound. All the windows closed. Anyway.
Yep.
What are we doing here? Well, we're playing the box office game for Jackie Brown. December 28, 1997. Which is virtually 1998, let's be honest. If you release a film December 28, 1997, you're releasing it in 1998. That's really the rule. Now,
in the UK for sure, yeah.
Budget brackets estimated. How much do you think it cost to get two of the best songs ever written in this film?
Well, as I recall from my Pulp Fiction knowledge, I think he got about 20 mil for the old Pulp Fiction, and that movie made so much money, he had a blank check to fund this flick.
But what number did he write on the blank check? And did he make the film blank check with that kid who buys all the toys?
It's still just it's a 3-hour crime caper where there's no real action.
Across 110th Street.
$50 million?
The estimated budget for this movie is $12 million.
Are you having a laugh?
I'm not having a laugh. That's what it says on IMDb. I can double check elsewhere if you would like.
No. That's I just thought he would have paid all those people loads of money.
I don't think that's what happened. Because
what a fantastic, that's absolutely pristine filmmaking. My hat goes off to Tarantino, having just slagged him off.
You're not wearing a hat. Anyway, opening weekend, US and Canada. Remember what we said? Deck 28, 1997. How much does this movie take?
I don't think it makes loads, even though it's Tarantino. I think it's quite a few years after Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is 1994, is it?
94, I think, yeah.
94. And people are like, oh, what, 2 hours 50? Ooh, crime caper. Ooh, soft reviews. I don't know about that. 3 million?
Opening weekend US and Canada, 9.2 mil.
Ooh, it's already nearly made its budgio back.
Well, it's budgio, exactly. Now, gross worldwide.
Never mind the marketing.
I double-checked the gross worldwide number. I cross-referenced it with Box Office Mojo because I thought that looks a little low, but as it turns out, the one that IMDb has is just the domestic gross and it didn't include the worldwide gross, so we've added them together and I've come up with a new number for you. Okay,
great. Well, I think so. Now we're now for the big number. And Tarantino, he travels now off the back of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Hey, wanna get those dogs out of that reservoir? That's our drinking water, huh? You got no respect for clean drinking water. You know how our forefathers toiled with the diseases that they came, but they were got from drinking in the water that was just standing water. You ever know about the dangers of standing water? You do now.
Do you know why the movie Reservoir Dogs is called the movie Reservoir Dogs?
I think it's because a handful of dogs fell into a reservoir and poisoned the drinking water.
Do you want to know the answer?
Yes.
I can tell you.
Hey, guy from the future. I'd love to know the answer. Tell me, please.
Well, Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino, back in the past when he was a movie video nerd, him and his pals were going to go to the cinema, and someone said, oh, should we go and see Au Revoir Les Enfants, the famous goat-like French New Wave movie, and someone else, not Quentin Tarantino.
No.
Someone else within Quentin Tarantino's earshot was heard to remark, "I ain't going to see no Reservoir Dogs." Just a little magpie. Meow. Hello. Hello, what's that? What's that lovely little phrase? I'm going to have that. And I'm going to pop it in my purse. this is, you know, this game's impossible. So I'll just pick a number.
Just pick a number.
90.
You're already way off on the other two, so it doesn't, you know.
Oh, fine. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cheers.
I hoped it would take away some of the pressure for you to let you know that you already were quite substantially far away on both of your previous.
But then
guesses.
I could come good, mate. 90 mil.
No. It's pretty close. It was pretty close. It did domestically, it did $39 million. Worldwide, it did $39 million. So it's 78. Not so far off with 90. It made $78 million overall. So a little tepid. A small.
What are you talking about? There's nothing tepid. If you make a movie for $12 million.
Related to the 10x rule, I was saying. I'm not saying tepid. I'm not saying
no.
I'm not saying tepid results. I'm saying tepid related to the 10x rule. That's all it is. That's all it was. You said yourself he didn't receive the response he wanted to Jackie Brown.
This is why
I think we're seeing this that in the numbers here as well.
This is what, like, you make a movie for $12 million and you make $78 million and then it's tepid. Like, Pulp Fiction made. Should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot?
Oh, very close. And next week you'll get it, Adam. I'd love to do that. It's your turn.
You got me on
Jackie Brown.
You got me on Jackie Brown.
I'm hot in this room.
You're ruining the end of the show.
Have you ever... Do you know when you go out with your wife? You go out with your wife and... Before she left the house, she said, "Oh, should I have a little apple or something?" And she went, "No, I'll be fine. And then she gets out there, and then you're waiting for something, and she's a little bit snappy. And you think, what have I done? What's happening? And then she goes, "Sorry, I'm just a bit hungry. You know, I'm a bit hungry, yeah. And now yeah. I hate you, and I'm livid about yeah. everything." Yeah?
Yeah.
That's how I feel, except instead of it being hungry, it's about being hot. And I'm your wife, and you're my husband, and I am livid, okay? Because I'm so hot in here.
Yeah, no, and that's 5 minutes now you've just spent where I can't have a little bit of fun reading out a list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read out five films. If I don't get you on five, you have one in your back pocket.
Oh.
Don't tell me what it is.
Okay.
And we'll do that, okay?
Yeah, I've definitely got one in my back pocket.
So here we go.
Yep.
The Fisher King.
With Jeff...
Bridges.
I've never seen it.
Okay. Nightcrawler.
I would say it's not a forgot yet. I think it could be. I think it could slip into the realms of the forgot you forgot, but it's a bit of a streaming darling and amongst a certain age group of men who think it's cool to be a psycho. I think it's not forgotten, so I'm going to say no, but I'm not opposed to it re-entering the canon later on.
For me, it's a forgot you forgot.
Fair enough.
People don't talk about it.
I could get you on it then.
Looper.
Have we not done Looper?
No.
I mean, it's the most fucking plum forgot you forgot that's ever been said, isn't it? It's the plummest of plums. I really don't want to watch it because I was so bored when I watched it the first and second time.
Right.
But I tell you what, could we do me a solid and just give me one or two more. But Looper, there's no two ways about it. It's dead center plum canon, forgot you forgot. And it was the one of the big films of that year, and it was just so forgettable. Go on.
Take Shelter.
I hate Michael Shannon.
Really?
Yeah, man, come on. Big old lumbering tall man that does the same thing in every film. Oh, I'm mental. Oh, I'm Michael Shannon. Oh. Get over yourself. Jesus Christ.
Worth it for that. The Graduate.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't know if I could ever forget The Graduate.
Really?
Have you forgotten The Graduate?
I've forgotten everything about The Graduate.
Really?
Not everything, like, that's what people know, but like the
maybe you just remember him banging on the glass at the top of the
church.
Yeah,
that's it, but like the meat of the movie, that's it. You know, but that's like saying you haven't forgotten The Godfather because you're like, just when I was out, they pulled me back in. That's not the movie.
Yeah, but, you know, I get what you're saying, but also that is movies. That's the language of cinema at times, isn't it? And there's at least two iconic things in that film that make it hard to forget. A good guess, though. It was a good one, and I like it. And however,
I usually stay within like the 90s, 2000 canon. I wanted to sprawl out.
You've sprawled. I liked it. The thing is, I'm looking back over the five now, and I know what I said, and what I said was that Looper is the most plumb thing you've ever said. However, it is quite boring, isn't it? Don't you think it's a bit boring?
I don't think it's a bit boring. I would have loved a reason to redo it. There's no way I'm going to have an episode where I have to sit and listen to you say, "It's so boring." Like, forget it. I'll just capitulate.
Right. So you don't mind if I veto it then? Just for now, I'd happily do Looper in the future because I would like to revisit Looper. It's just that I feel like if I watch Looper this week, I feel like I know how I'm going to respond to Looper, and it's going to be what you just said. Probably also because it is boring.
It's like if you insisted I watched a art house tone poem, I would probably feel the same way. So
yeah,
I'm going to start pruning my list of Looper and the likes.
Okay.
And You have a free hit. Free hit me.
Well, no, but listen, free hit. What I'm going to do on free hit is, this is a little bit of inside information, okay? This has come up in conversation before, but you've told me that it's been many a moon since you watched The Bourne Identity.
I mean, maybe when it came out, when I was at uni.
Really? That's that the only time?
I mainly was a Supremacy Ultimatum guy. Yeah, that song crops up in the other ones as well.
Yeah.
You're an identity guy.
I mean, it's the best one, so obviously.
I never think of it.
Right. Well, let's watch it then. Should we watch it?
I'd fucking love to. It's an action movie.
Oh, get ready to watch a Clive Owen masterpiece in a field, my friend. Goodness me.
Oh, I mean, yeah, of course.
Daddy.
That's
look at what they make you give, huh? Look at what they make you give.
God, that's all you've got, man, in conversation. You go into any conversation with anyone. You go to a dinner party, and then afterwards someone else leaves, and they're like, "How was your evening?" Yeah, no, it was fine. I was like chatting to this guy. I think he was called Joe. He kept talking about he does podcasts and stuff. Oh yeah, was it fun? Yeah, it was. He did keep just saying the same thing.
Mm.
It just kept bringing it back to the same thing.
Hi, my name's Tony. This guy sounds interesting. The guy you're talking about. What was his name again?
He kept saying, the things it the things it takes from you. He kept saying. Clive Owen and muttering.
The things they make you give. Yeah. That's a great scene in that film, isn't it, that one? This guy sounds like a real hero.
He kept saying it. I would say, "Oh, can I have some water?" And then he'd lean in and he'd raise his eyebrow and he'd say,
"The things they make you give." Come on, that's great. That's great. I love this guy. Sounds great. Wow.
And then
did he do it?
Then the waiter would come over. Well. Waiter would come over and say, "Yeah. Can I take your order?"
Yeah.
And then he'd turn and raise his eyebrow to the waiter, and then back to me, and then he'd say,
"The things they make you give." Oh yeah, this guy sounds like an absolute hero. What, you didn't enjoy this?
And then at the end of the meal,
yeah.
I've like politely nodded and laughed every single time. And then he was basically quivering with excitement for this line for the waiter to come over and
yeah.
And the waiter came over and handed over the bill and he positively came in his pants.
But he exploded.
And yeah. he said,
what they make you give. Yeah.
Right. And wow. It was like, yes. Okay. like this cannot be the function of a conversation for the entirety of an evening. A polite
dinner
party.
This guy sounds like
party.
A true savant, you know, like a genius savant. I think this is one of the greatest comedy bits I've ever heard. I'd love to meet this guy. Did you catch his name?
I think he said he was called John McKenzie.